I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica. And this is All Things Sensory by Harkla.
We are both certified occupational therapy assistants, and together with Harkla, we are on a mission to empower parents, therapists, and educators to help raise confident and strong children of all abilities.
On this podcast, we chat about all things sensory, diving into special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, overall health and wellness, and so much more.
We are here to provide raw, honest, and fun strategies, ideas, and information for parents, therapists, and educators, as well as other professionals to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey everyone, welcome back to your favorite podcast, All Things Sensory by Harkla. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica, and today we are having a conversation with Brittany. She is a school-based OT, and we talk about all things school.
Yes, specifically middle school, high school students, how she really builds rapport with them and helps them thrive. And, you know, it's she says it throughout the episode that it's an underserved. It's an unpopular area to work as an OT or a CODA, and hopefully we'll change that stigma, because she definitely shares some fun activities and some fun things to do with these students who are older and set in their ways and maybe a little more stubborn.
And she loves it. She's very passionate. So let's jump in.
Hi, Brittany. How are you today?
I'm good. How are y'all doing?
We're so good. I want you to tell everyone where you're from really quick, because you have that y'all. And so I love it. I just want to know.
I'm from Southern Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Is that
but like middle of the state, Southern Florida, not like Miami. So
okay. Is that common for y'all? Like people say y'all there?
Yes. Yes. It's like, especially where I'm from, because it's a really small rural town. So
We're
still stuck in the South. Yes.
Perfect.
Okay, before we find out all of your deepest, darkest secrets, we do have 5 secret questions so our listeners and our viewers can get to know you, and I don't know, just fun conversations we like to have.
Sounds good.
Okay, number one.
What is your favorite dessert?
Ooh, I'm not much of like a sweet eater, so I'd have to say like popcorn, but then I like to put sriracha on it, so it's like spicy.
No, that is not the question. That's not – no. Desserts? That's what you have for dessert.
I don't eat sweets.
Oh, just like chomping down on chocolate. So okay. I don't know how to continue on after that.
You're going to have to just figure it out. I know. We're just going to move past this one.
Okay. Number 2. This question's hilarious. Would you rather listen to an annoying laugh for a whole day or get tickled for an hour?
Definitely the laugh. 100%. Because I find my laugh to be annoying, and I laugh all the time. So I'm like, oh, I could handle another person's annoying laugh because everybody has to listen to mine. So we're good.
Oh, goodness.
Your reasoning is so good. Oh, my goodness.
My answer would be the same. I'd rather do the annoying laugh for a whole day, but only because I really, really hate being tickled.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
who likes it? Maybe if it was like a light tickle, like a light touch.
Ooh, no.
Like, oh, nope. Both of you guys had a visceral reaction.
No, thanks.
Yeah, but that light touch is not a friend.
Oh, we're going to have maybe find out what her
I know.
Early. All right, next question is, what is the last song you listened to?
Oh, what was it? Like on the radio one, like I chose to listen to.
Just the last song either.
I think it was like Fall Out Boy. I was listening to the XM station, like the 2000s hits, and I think it was Fall Out Boy. I don't remember which one. I just kind of like zoned out.
I can't even think of that one. That's a hard question.
Yeah. The one that I chose to listen to, though, was like, I was having a rough morning, so I listened to Little John, snap your fingers.
Yes! I love that. That's okay.
A great pump up song.
That really is.
It was. It was just, you know.
Was it what you needed? Did it help?
It was.
It flipped the switch?
I mean, I wish I would have had Starbucks with me and it would have made it so much better, but it made me like happy to walk through the school doors instead of being in a horrible, horrible mood.
Perfect.
That's what we like to hear. Okay. What three things would you take with you to a deserted island?
I think I take like my Yeti canteen so I could have water and it'd be cold.
Okay. Thinker. We like that.
Cold water's important. Uh-huh.
And then I'd probably bring a book. I don't know which one, but a book. And then I guess I'd bring I'd bring my husband and my daughter, but I guess they come together. They're a package deal.
Your family,
that's not,
yeah.
That's not two, it's one.
Exactly.
I love it.
I like it, yeah. I'm like, when I wrote this question, Logan, my son, didn't even come into my brain.
I mean, it could be vacation.
You were thinking things, not people.
Maybe
if the question, who could you bring... Who, what three people would you bring?
Clearly, this shows people's priority.
Now I'm curious what you would have brought.
It's another conversation.
Oh, okay. Off the record. Okay.
Last question. What is your sensory quirk?
Oh, light touch. 100%.
Okay.
I knew it. When the tickle thing came up, I knew it.
Yep.
Just even thinking about it makes me like cringe. So,
does your hair bother you?
My hair doesn't bother me, but it's like, I think it's because it's expected, especially when it's down. But if it's like a light touch and it's not expected, I get goosebumps and I just like, ugh.
Like nails on a chalkboard feeling.
Yes, like for sure.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay, well, now that we all know your deepest, darkest secrets, tell us who you are, what you do, why you do it, all the beautiful things.
So I am Brittany Barnes, and I am a pediatric OT. I'm currently working in the school setting. I'm primarily at a middle school and a high school. I do still work outpatient, but very limited. And I still see mainly the high school and middle school aged kids. I think that's kind of where my heart lies. And I just love how sassy they are and how much growth you can see. So I am a mom and my daughter is 4 and she is so sweet, but so sassy. And she keeps me on my toes.
Yeah.
So it's fun. And then, yeah, that's main things about me. Oh, I am on a local nonprofit, autism awareness nonprofit board, and we just had our first event this past weekend, and it was so much fun. So
you're on the board of the nonprofit. You're on the board of a nonprofit.
I am.
Cool.
I
am.
That's really cool. You'll have to send us the info for that.
I will. We're only on Facebook so far, so I'll send that to you.
Perfect.
Okay, so you work with primarily middle and high school students in the school setting. But when you do outpatient, who do you work with when you do outpatient?
So I work anywhere from, I think my last eval was like a 1-year-old to, I think my oldest right now is 16. So I have that nice big range where my brain is going from, what do I do with the little ones again? To, oh, now we're working with the one that we're transitioning. Okay.
The best way to keep your skills up, right?
Yes.
A little bit of everything.
But you said that your heart is with the older kiddos.
Yes. I love working with them. They just get my sense of humor and I can like joke with them. And I just love that they ask the questions. Most of the time they're like, well, why am I doing this? And I can explain it to them and it makes it more motivating for them because they're like, oh, well, yeah, I want to be able to play soccer or get a job. And it clicks with them, especially since they're getting closer and closer to aging out of the school system. So
I will say, when you brought up the fact that you can joke with them and they get your sense of humor, like, that was always my favorite thing too, is I love just like being sarcastic and joking. And so many of the kiddos, the older kiddos that I've worked with, just, they get it, and it's fun, and you can just really just be yourself and connect with them and build rapport with them on a different level than with the younger ones.
Exactly. And that's like always my biggest thing with any of my kids, is like building that connection first before you do anything. You have to have that connection. So I feel like it's easier for me to connect with older kids. And it's probably because I have a 4-year-old at home, and that's where all of my little kid energy goes, is with her.
I can relate. Yeah.
It's so funny because I'm the opposite. I'm like, I want all of the little babies and the little toddlers. Mm-hmm. That was always where I wanted to be. So,
but. Okay, today we're going to all of them. So today we're going to focus on the older kiddos. So let's talk about just some of your favorite activities to do with middle school, high schoolers, starting with like fine motor things.
So one of my favorite things to do, and I get a lot of flack for it, but not from the kids. I love to turn board games into like Kerplunk, Connect Four, like all the kids are games that you'd think for like maybe elementary school kids, into something that the older kids can benefit from. And I do get flack for it because they're like, they're big kids, they don't need to play games. I was like, I'm almost 30 years old and I love to play board games. Don't come up here with that kind of negativity. So I love using the board games. This past week and into this week, I'm using Kerplunk because it's great for that fine motor precision and all like in hand manipulation skills. And I've been finding more so now that my high schoolers and my middle schoolers, they don't have good fine motor skills at all. Like, wasn't like this a few years ago. So it's very interesting. Very interesting. Let's try another whole.
It's a whole different topic that we could dive into.
So I love using board games. I do use a lot of putty. And I try to make it fun and make it not as clinical, because when they come to me, they're always like, so what fun thing are we going to do today, Ms. BR? And I'm like, we're going to play games. That's what we're going to do. So it's kind of like a nice little break from academics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have to make it fun so that it's motivating for them, so that they're not like, oh man, I have to go to OT again. You know, it's more like, yes, I get to go to OT.
Exactly. I mean, I do have those other kids that are like, ugh. But it's okay. I'm still winning them over.
Yes, it'll happen.
It will. By the time they graduate, it'll be like, oh, I want to come to you now.
Yeah.
Actually, I liked that.
So how do you work on gross motor skills in the school setting with these older kiddos?
So I don't have a room. A lot of school-based OTs, especially at the middle school and high school level that I've talked to, don't have a designated space. So I push into the classroom a lot, but with it being the middle school and high school, a lot of the times the direct students that we see face-to-face are in those, we call them SVE in my district. So where they are not on standards. So I can push into their classrooms and most of my kids are right there. So that becomes my treatment space. So I don't do a ton of gross motor, but when I notice like we need to work on balance or midline crossing and things like that, I will bring like my little stability disc and I use that for most of my activities. So it's definitely more of a challenge at the middle school, high school level to work on gross motor, but I try to figure it out. I'm also at some of the bigger schools and not even just my state, but in the country. So I can't really necessarily go in the hallway or in the courtyard because it is just constant kids and staff. So
things like a sensory path or like a motor lab, those would be challenging in the area.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So gross motor is not as targeted, but our PT, she does a lot, and I tried to coordinate with her, but we're just so busy. She's at so many schools, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's got to be tough.
That sounds like the life of a school-based OT. Yeah. Is that it's just, it's crazy. You're busy. You're running around everywhere. That's just how it is right now.
Yeah.
It is. It's fun, but it's definitely challenging.
And then what activities do you use to work on the social emotional components at middle and high school?
So a lot of the times I work with what we call the support facilitators, and they have programs. So one of them is the zones of regulation, and they've adapted it to where it's a little bit more in depth, where they can talk about like what's going on at the middle school and the high school level instead of, I'll like push in with them and we'll talk about different, like how we can control. So with all of the social emotional, I do push in with the support facilitators. They do typically take the lead on that. And I'm just there to kind of like, oh, well, here's another idea, because it's typically we follow the IEP and they're the ones that are doing the social emotional. I have valuable information. It's just I'm not that person at my schools.
Gotcha. So takes the team approach, working all together. I like that.
So what I'm curious about is like what a treatment session for you would look like. Like, can you kind of go through just an example treatment session in either a middle school or high school?
Yes. So I typically push in. So I'll walk in and I'll greet everybody. And depending on like who I have to see, I'll pull the kids to like the side tables. I don't have a lot of handwriting goals, but I do have a lot of functional get your thoughts to something goals. So whether it's handwriting or typing. So I like to usually start with like a fine motor like warm up. That way once we're typing or writing, we can have our fingers ready. So I do a lot of like dexterity. Like I have something called the emoji challenge that I've made. And I do the emoji challenge where they have to like follow the sequence with their hands. And I, depending on the student, I try to do like either two different cards so that they're having to work and do different hand movements. Then I go on to either the handwriting activity, or if we're doing organizational skills, then that's the next thing. And then I try to do like a debrief at the end, like, so what did we do, so that they know like, yes, we started with this, but what was the function of it? So we talk about like, we did the handwriting warm-up, so our hands are ready to work. We go into, well, why were we working on our handwriting? What was the reason? Was it because we need to work on our spacing? Is it because you aren't on the line? Or with typing, are we not using both hands? So then I give them homework at the end to work on. And then at the end, because I am typically in those classrooms for an extended amount of time, I'll go talk to the teacher and I'll be like, hey, student A over here, we really worked on this, this, and this. Can you please try to follow through with that throughout the weekend till I see them next week and we can debrief again? So that's kind of how I do with each of my kids. And then I follow the same pattern because they're like, I want to do that. So even if I'm not working on like handwriting with student A, they see student B doing it, then I'll like try to tweak it to, okay, let's do an organizational thing. And I'll turn my activity into that. So a lot of like on the fly chaos. Yes.
I really like how you debrief with the student, though, to talk to them like, hey, this wasn't just playing or this wasn't just for nothing. There's a reason for it. And then, you know, hopefully they retain that and understand that a little bit better to then be more independent with it in the future.
I've had a few parents like email me and be saying, thank you. Now I know what we need to work on at home, because the kids have that now established pattern. And then the parents can be like, oh, so what was your debrief at home with Miss B? And most of the time, not all of the kids, but a lot of the kids can tell the parents. And I've had those emails like, thank you so much. Now give me more ideas. So.
Okay, I'm going back to the emoji challenge. Wasn't that like an Instagram filter that you had to like follow?
Yes.
And then
it was TikTok. Yep.
Oh, I never saw TikTok. But I do remember like something on Instagram where you had to like quickly imitate the hand emoji symbols. And yes. I was like, this is a great OT activity.
And because I do also teachers pay teachers. So I saw that and was like, oh my gosh, I need that for my kids for teletherapy. So I quickly made that up and I put it in my Teachers Pay Teachers shop. And it's like, I use it daily, like still 2 years later, I still use it on a daily
basis.
It's
a great warm up. Like, I love it.
So
that's awesome. That's what I was thinking about. I was like, oh man, I swear that's like.
I can't picture it in my head. I don't know if I
ever it was a while ago. Yeah, it was a while ago.
It was like a beginning of 2020, March 2020.
Yeah, when we were all dying for things to do on social media.
Oh, and teletherapy.
Yeah.
Before we dive into teletherapy also, I was just thinking when you were describing, you know, the session in the classroom, I was like, oh, you're doing all of the executive functioning skills with these kids. Is that kind of the main focus when you're with these older kids?
That's my main focus. It doesn't necessarily go with exactly what their goals are, but I think that executive functioning skills are, since they're so important, we need them for everything, that we need to be starting our kids working on that seamlessly. So even, yeah, like I use it all the time and I make sure that my kids know like, oh, we're working on the organization because Miss B is the worst at this and I have to use my planner, and then I'll show them my phone and my calendar and I'm like, look, I have to write this down or I will forget because I have the worst. Yeah. So, and they really enjoy that I'm a little self-deprecating, and they're like, oh, well, that's why I need to do this so I'm not like you. Thanks.
Goodness. Hey, however you build the rapport, right? Whatever works. Whatever gets that buy-in,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, we can jump into
teletherapy. Yes, let's talk about teletherapy. You probably started teletherapy in 2020, I'm assuming, with everyone else. Are you still doing teletherapy with clients?
Kind of. Because I've stepped back from that outpatient facility, I will do some. We still do, like, through that company, we're still doing teletherapy, but, because I'm working full time at the schools, I've just taken a step back. But I do see probably monthly 2 or 3 on teletherapy. Most of the times it's evals though, which that's a whole different ballgame doing evals teletherapy, but I still keep some clients because I'm like, I want to keep my skills up because there's so many different new platforms that have come up since we began teletherapy. Like I use Boom cards all the time, even with my students in person, but I still have those going, like I still use those for teletherapy as well, but there's new websites and all of that. So.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about some of your favorite resources for teletherapy. So some of your like Boom cards. What are Boom cards? What are some of your favorite online therapy resources for teletherapy? And then like activities that you've created.
Okay. So Boom cards are these like really fun, interactive think like a Google or a PowerPoint presentation or one of those teachers pay teachers worksheets that you can do digitally. Like you can click and drag and drop, you can type in it, you can, and it's instantly corrected. So you can see if you have it correct or if the child needs to go back and work a little or redo it to get that correct feedback to go on to the next card. I love using Boom cards. They're so fun. I use them a lot with my older kids because older kids are my jam. So even during teletherapy, I had a lot of those older middle school and high school kids. So I didn't have a lot of the little babies. But so I'd use like, there's an escape room. That was a Boom card. I know one of the OTs made this like great house, and we'd go through and do shopping and what we need to do for making our bed, like in sequencing. Another great website that I like to use was, what is it called? Jigsaw.com. And it's a jigsaw puzzle that you can make as big as you want with as many pieces up to like 1,000 to as small as you want to where it's like 5. So I loved that because I could grade it for all of my kids. Another is I love using word searches, and I think it's like kidswordsearch.com, and it's free, and it's like Disney characters, food, countries, anything that you have like interest in, you could find a word search and you can actually like drag and drop, and I'd screen share it so the kid could do it themselves to work on that visual scanning and all of that fun stuff. Like those are my top three go-to. I mean, I did like ABC Y'all and like the typingclub.com, but those are my top three because you can do so much with just that.
And I mean, you know, as OTs and CODAs, we love the more hands-on sensory approach, but these sound like great tools to use for, you know, even outside of teletherapy.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I give these recommendations to my parents all the time. Like they ask for activities they can do at home that'll increase the visual attention and typing and just multitude of things. And I tell them, I was like, this is what I use for teletherapy, and my kids loved it. And they really like that perspective because their kids want to be on the computer or the iPad because they've been in school all day. They just want to veg, but you can veg, but be
productive.
Productive.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I remember Jeopardy. There was an online Jeopardy game that you could make with the kids, and they can like set up, they can choose the theme and they can pick the answers, and just setting it up took so many skills, and then to either play it with you or to play it with someone else, it just added an additional layer. So I remember Jeopardy was a fun one, and I've never been a Jeopardy person, but I really liked that activity. I
always loved Jeopardy.
I just never knew the answers.
Well, it's
hard. And I like to win. It's hard. So I couldn't win.
They have the Jeopardy game in Friends, remember?
Wait, what?
When Ross creates
the game,
Jeopardy.
Yes, that's true. It is. Yeah.
We need a sensory Jeopardy game. Sorry.
Oh,
this
there
is like
we go.
Totally off topic, but.
Right.
Sensory
Jeopardy.
Yes, sensory Jeopardy.
I love it.
I have two ideas that I have to remember now. Okay, let's carry on.
Okay. I'm curious how being a mom has changed your OT practice.
It really has. I started practicing back in 2016. Actually got pregnant right off the bat. So I was pregnant my first year, then had my daughter. And it's going to sound so like kind of like heartless, but it definitely made me not want to be working in the same setting or same age group as she is, because you do that at home, and you as a mom you wear so many different hats just being a mom, and then going to work and doing the same thing with kids the same age, that was just so hard for me. So that definitely influenced where I was setting wise, because I definitely have more patience and am able to play more with my own daughter when I'm not working in the same age range as her. But from like a communication standpoint, that changed how I talk to parents 100%, because you don't want to hear anything negative about your child. Like, you automatically go on defensive, and it's like, my child, I mean, I know that they're sassy and they're this, this, and this, but you cannot tell me that. Like, hearing it from someone else, like, that's, it completely changed my way of communicating, because if my daughter were to go to OT, I'd be like, excuse me, no ma'am.
Oh my gosh, I agree completely. I think that that probably is something that changed for me as well. I mean, not changed necessarily because I had my son before I started working in the clinic, but as he got older, it definitely made me realize that I needed to communicate differently to parents and to the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, in OT school, we were definitely taught like, build that rapport. But once you have your own kid and you think about, you kind of see your kid and each of your, like, they're like your kids, no matter how long you have them, even if it's not your flesh and blood, like, you love them and you want them to succeed. So whenever I go and meet a new kid, I'm like, okay, I have to build that relationship because I'm going to be a big part of their life, no matter if I'm there for a year, 6 months, or for the long haul. Like, so I think that building that connection too, like, really hit me whenever I had my daughter. Cause I'm like, once again, try to like reverse roles. And I'm like, I'd want a therapist to be loving my kid just as much and having that connection just as much as me.
Definitely.
So true.
Yes, I know.
I'm like, if all therapists thought the same way,
yeah,
every single therapist in the world would just be amazing.
It'd be a better world out there.
Not dissing on other therapists, no. Just saying.
It's an important therapeutic use of self, you know, yes. Just being able to understand and just like feel differently about these kiddos that you're working with, and you just would make so much progress.
Yeah, like, they're not just a client, or they're not just a, you know, someone that you're working with to get a paycheck. Like, yeah, they're somebody's child and somebody really loves them.
Yeah.
And like teletherapy, like, I know I'm going back to that, but like, my daughter was home with me for a good 6 months doing teletherapy full time. So, and I always talk to the parents, and I'm like, you're allowing me into your home. Like, this is a whole new level of vulnerability for both of us. Like, now I still will text some of my families and I'm like, how are you guys doing? Cause you build such an intimate relationship whenever you're in somebody's home. Like, it's the same with the home visit, but they got to see my daughter grow up too. And it just, I think having her and then teletherapy, like, you definitely learn to be more, not humble, but like vulnerable. And you have to be more, not respectful, but it's just a different kind of connection with the families.
True. So true. I did want to go back to schools just a little bit, because I was just curious, what are some tips that you could give other school-based therapists when communicating and working with the teachers?
Yes. Oh my goodness. Okay. So I, once again, middle school and high school, so I don't see a lot of the general education teachers. I pretty much work with the special ed teachers. But what I make sure to do is I make sure to like show my face to everyone. And I'm at a pretty big school, so I'll try to go to like the luncheons. I try to go to lunch when the teachers are there. So they're like, they know my face. And that way, whenever I come up to them, I'm like, hey, I know you have Johnny in your class. And I know that this is his goal. And I know sometimes that they can be a little bit frustrating for you because of whatever reason. They know my face. and then they know that I'm coming from a place of like wanting to help. So that's like my number one is like making sure that people know your face because they're more likely to want to listen to you. Another thing I've done, and it's been a game changer for communication with teachers, is using a Google Doc or no, Google Form. That way, like the teacher, I can be like, hey, I'm looking at this specific thing. Like, how are they doing with this strategy? And they're able to just quickly respond. And I use a lot of like Likert scales or yes, no questions. And then I have a, at the bottom, like a little comment box, like, okay, now give me like some, if it, the strategy is working and how well it's working, or if we need to move on. So it's able to give me a lot more in-depth information without having to try to figure out, hey, I know you're free on this period, but I have a student then. So let's try to reconnect at this time. So it takes a lot of that scheduling hassle out of it because that is so, so hard to like get your teachers to sit down and talk because they have so much on their plate. So much. I can't even fathom being a teacher right now.
No, I love that. So they can take 5 minutes to fill it out, answer the questions, and that way you have a written document as well. So it's not in and out of your brain either. So you can look back and almost track the data.
I've made one where it's like a freebie. So I've like sent it out to like a lot of therapists on my Instagram because they've asked. And I've also made like just sheets so I can like print it out and put it in there for my, each of my folders. So that's how I keep, cause we have a lot of, especially at the middle school and high school level, a lot of our kids are consultation or collaboration, meaning we're not seeing them directly. So that keeping that rapport up with those teachers, it's, that's the way we see those kids. So.
Totally. Can you explain what push in is? I know we have a lot of parents listening who might not know what that term is. And maybe if their child is in OT services at school, it might help to have that explained a little bit.
Of course. So push in is when the therapist will go into the classroom and work with the student, either with what the class is doing. Typically that's what happens like in an elementary school with like the general education classes. I did that a lot when I was working in elementary. I'd push in and during like writing time and I would help and facilitate. Now everyone's on a differentiated schedule for the classes I'm in. So I'm able to actually like pool the kids in the classroom, but pushing in to help in a certain area. So a lot of times like PTs will push in during PE and then
so forth. Yeah.
Yes. And then pulling out would be pulling them into like your own classroom, your OT. Own area. Mm-hmm. If you had a room.
Like a motor lab or groups or pulling them into the OT room, those kinds of things. Yeah.
Do you feel like pushing in is more beneficial?
My gut was yes, but sometimes it's not. It's like that. It depends on that student because sometimes pulling out to learn the skill is so beneficial than pushing in to make sure it's carried over is what I used to do in the elementary. But now the pushing in all the time, like I do see a lot of growth, but I do see sometimes that my kids are very distracted. So it just depends on what you're looking at and how the kid is, because that distractibility is a huge, huge, huge portion of it. But I also am like, you're going to have to pay attention in class no matter what. So we got to kind of push through that. Yeah, so
that's a good point. I was going to ask, do any of your clients that you see in the classroom, do they receive outside OT services that you have like collaborated with their OT for certain things?
I haven't. Well, not currently. At my old, like when I was working in pre-pandemic in the schools, yes, there was a lot more collaboration with therapists. But the area I'm at currently, a lot of people aren't doing outside services, or the wait lists are so long that they stopped during COVID and now they're just waiting to get back in. So there's not a lot of outpatient services going on, which is actually really devastating for the kids. So.
Oh, for sure.
No kidding.
For sure.
I can't remember what my question was.
That's okay. We'll do the next one. Yeah. What would you say is your biggest challenge with what you do?
So this is like where my self-deprecating comes in. I am a hot mess. Like I'm chaos, like when it comes to like organization and all of that. So like staying organized and like even organizing a session, like that is my biggest struggle, because I'm like, oh, we can do this. We can do this. We can do this. We can do this. I want to do all the things. And we can't.
That's Rachel. 100%.
That is me. Yes. Yes. That is me. I like to think that maybe people don't know. They can't like look at me and be like, oh, this chick is disorganized. I like to fake it till I make it. But Jessica's the organized one. I am. I mean, I bring some skills to the table.
No, you're like the org. It's not like you can't get things done.
It's just I have a different route to get there, which yeah. I'm sure you probably too. It makes sense in your brain how you get from point A to point B and how you document and how you run your sessions. But if it was someone else looking in who was more organized, they'd be like, how? And you're like, makes perfect sense to me. What are you talking about?
It's so funny because like one of the SLPs that I work like really close with is so organized and I like envy her, but I'm like, she looks at me like, what are you doing? I'm like, it makes sense. Like I did this and I have my scrap piece of paper over here and then I have the actual thing that I'm trying to like retrain my brain to use right here. Like that's why I've made so many like new organizational things for OTs because I need it for myself. So.
I love it. I think it's great.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. It's fun.
What's next for you professionally? You have a teachers pay teachers account. What other things do you do? What are you working on?
So it's
in your spare time.
So I am in the middle of creating like a course for just middle school and high school practitioners, because it is such an underserved area. There's so much information and resources for like younger kids, but it's kind of once they get to middle school, they're like, what do we do with you? So kind of, and I'm in the middle of it, but I'm almost done. Hopefully by the end of this month, I'll have it like out and ready. But it's like going to be a little workshop for middle school and high school OTs.
Very cool. Ooh,
that's really exciting. Well, the fun thing about this is that this episode won't launch until like the summertime-ish. So by that time, it'll be out and everyone can find it and get ready to use it for when school starts again. So that's perfect.
That's exciting.
And yes, this is
by May is like my deadline for myself.
Oh, I was going to say, this is the motivation that you needed to get it done.
Yes, it is. Because I'm like, I have got to get this done. I spent all spring break like staring at it and I didn't do it.
Oh, oh, no. It's spring break.
Spring break. Oh, no.
That's exciting.
That's what's next for me. So
that's super
exciting.
Cool.
And yes. I'm also, I've started taking mentees. So that's been fun too.
Awesome. Have you had any students?
I haven't. And I'm so sad about that. I really want one. But it's been chaos since the beginning because I don't know if I want a student because I don't want them to learn how to be disorganized me.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I love it.
No. I would love to have a student because I feel like my setting is so fun and so underlooked and people are like, I don't want to work with them, but they're so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you do mentorships? Is that what you said?
I've just just started doing it and kind of like dabbling in that. So it's going well so far.
Well, where can everyone find all your information?
So I am on Instagram, Play the OT Way. I'm also on Facebook, same Play the OT Way. I also have a website and I'm still working on my launch landing page for my mentorship and also my workshop, but it should be up soon.
Yeah, it'll be up in time and we'll link it all in the description and show notes.
Yes.
Once I have that, I'll send it to you.
Yes. Perfect.
The technology is like so crazy and I'm like learning as I go. So that's why it's taking so long, but
it's its own beast. It is. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you had one piece of advice to leave our listeners with, we have OTs, we have parents, we have educators, and then everything in between. What would your advice be?
My biggest thing is just build that connection first with your students or your child. And also build a team around your kid. I mean, it's so important to have somebody you can like run ideas up, like different ideas with, and from different perspectives. Sometimes I will talk to my SLP and I'll be like, hey, what do you think about this? And then she comes back and she's like, that's great for OT, but let's think about the whole child, because sometimes I forget that language and communication piece because I'm focused on my goals. So build that connection with that kid so we can actually have that rapport to work. And then also for parents and staff to have that team and be willing to collaborate. It goes hand in hand.
It does.
Yes. So, so important.
Yes. Love it.
Before we let you go, do you have any questions for us?
I don't, but I'm just, I'm like fangirling. So I've like listened to all of your podcasts and I've been here since the beginning of Loved It. I'm like, oh my gosh. So just fangirling over here.
Thank you. That's I'm excited awesome. To see this course that you're throwing
I know.
Out.
So. It is. It's such a much needed area that's underserved. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm excited. So,
I think that's it. Thank you so much for spending the time with us and sharing all of your tips and tricks for middle schoolers and high schoolers.
Yes.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Yeah.
So go follow Brittany on Instagram. She's at Play the OT Way, right? Play the OT Way.
Yep. Check out her new course that should be launched by now. We're recording this in April. And by the time it launches,
it's going to be out into the world.
Her course should be ready. So
it's her push to finish.
I know. So if you are serving the middle school, high school populations as a therapist, definitely check that out. Check out her teachers pay teachers account. She has a ton of resources there as well. Her Instagram account is also super helpful and fun. So lots of resources for you to learn about.
Yep. Let us know that you watched this episode. So take a screenshot of if you're listening on podcast platform or if you're watching us on YouTube, take a screenshot and post it to your social media and tag us at All Things Sensory Podcast. Yep. If you are listening or watching us on YouTube, make sure you subscribe and like this video.
There's so many ways now. If you're listening on the podcast, please take a minute and leave a review. Those are so helpful just to help us reach more clients, not more clients, to reach more parents, more educators, and
everyone.
Just everyone who needs this information. When you engage with our content, it helps us just find more people.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. And we're out of here and we will talk to you and see you next week.
Yes. All the things. We'll be here next Wednesday. Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla.
If you want more information on anything mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get the show notes.
If you have any follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is at harkla_family or at All Things Sensory Podcast. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us there.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harklet. Whether it's for one of our digital courses or one of our sensory swings, the discount code SENSORY will get you 10% off. That's SENSORY.
Head to harklet.co/sensory to use that discount code right now.
We are so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world. While we make every effort to share correct information, we're still learning.
We will double check all of our facts, but realize that medicine is a constantly changing science and art.
One doctor or therapist may have a different way of doing things from another.
We are simply presenting our views and opinions on how to address common sensory challenges, health-related difficulties, and what we have found to be beneficial that will be as evidence-based as possible.
By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or your child.
Consult your child's pediatrician or therapist for any medical issues that he or she may be having.
This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast.
Thanks so much for listening.